This year's Pulitzer Prize winner for nonfiction is out in paperback tomorrow. It's the second Pulitzer for New York Times reporter Andrea Elliott, the first woman to win Pulitzers for both arts and letters and journalism. In 2013, her story of a young girl named Dasani Coates took up five straight front pages in the New York Times. The oldest of eight, Dasani and her family lived in Brooklyn in a decrepit city-run homeless shelter. Andrea's story was a rare look into how homelessness directs the course of a life. Children are not often the face of homelessness, but in 2019, more than 100,000 children in New York City had no permanent home to go to. Andrea Elliott was allowed to follow Dasani's family for almost 10 years. She expanded her reporting into a book called Invisible Child: Poverty, Survival, and Hope in an American City. The book published last October, and Andrea joined me to talk about it. So you met Dasani in 2012. Dasani, her parents, and her seven siblings lived in one room in a homeless shelter in Fort Greene, which is a neighborhood of Brooklyn. Tell us how you met her, and what was she like?
Well, I'll never forget the first moment I saw Dasani and her family. I was standing outside the shelter, and Chanel, her mother, was walking at the front of a single-file line, trailed by her seven children and then pushing the stroller with the baby. And that image has stayed with me ever since, because it was so striking, the discipline that they showed to just walk in single file, the unity, the strength of that bond. I would later learn from Chanel that that was how she had been raised to survive the street. And family is everything. That bond is everything. So that's the image that stayed with me. But Dasani is the child of the group that stood out. You mentioned the room they were living in. The way she described her room in one of our first interviews was, it's like 10 people trying to breathe in the same room and they only give you five windows. From the very beginning, I felt just so drawn to Dasani because of her ability to articulate not only the injustice of her life, living in this way, in this mouse-infested shelter and being forced to wake up every morning in these conditions, but then also the promise of her life, which was all around her and even out her window. She would sit on her windowsill every morning and look at the Empire State Building. That was the way her morning routine began. And she told me she did that because it makes me feel like there's something going on out there. And that something is what I believe this book is about, is the tension between what is, what was that year and what continued to be her reality and the thing that she wanted for her life.
Well, Dasani's story is remarkable. It is compelling. It is difficult. It's horrifying in many ways. I mean, Dasani and her parents and her siblings lived a difficult life, and her parents were in and out of jail for stealing and fights and drugs, and child services showed up on 12 occasions. Dasani was the oldest child, but in many ways she was the parent, right, to her seven younger siblings. And I want to pick up on something you just said, that despite the difficult circumstances, Dasani was so full of potential. You write that few have both the depth of Dasani's troubles and the height of her promise. How did those two things collide as you watched her childhood evolve?
You know, that was from a conversation I had with her principal, Paula Holmes, who passed away. She was a remarkable woman, and she saw such potential in Dasani. I believe Ms. Holmes would also say that while she is a gifted child, she is not an exceptional child. Her problems and her promise are quite representative of poor children. Many children just like her exist. And I didn't choose to write about Dasani because she was extraordinary. I think she was special within ordinary circumstances. And that's such an important distinction, because I think that the stories that we tend to celebrate, and understandably so, are the stories of the one kid who made it out. It kind of lets us off the hook, because it allows us to say, if you work hard enough, if you are gifted enough, then you can beat this. And what we rarely ask is, why don't the other 99% make it out? Children like Dasani, who are just as willing, just as capable, just as talented, but who are barraged with problems that are not of their own making and are not their fault and are bigger than them. And I think if we look at Dasani's trajectory, we see a different kind of story. We see a story of a girl who's trying to not escape. This is not Dasani's hope for herself. Her hope for herself is to keep, as she's put it to me, her family and her culture close to her while also being able to excel. And I think rather than focusing on the escape from a neighborhood, what we should be doing is looking more at the problems that children are trying to leave behind and where those problems come from and what might fix them.
We'll speak to that a little bit because Dasani's story is emblematic of that. I mean, after her family leaves the homeless shelter, she is accepted to the Milton Hershey School, which is this tuition-free school in Pennsylvania. She thrives there, at least for a time, and she writes in her journal, "I believe I can achieve my dreams in this school." But despite this extraordinary opportunity, she talked often about just wanting to go home, right? As difficult as that home life was. So talk about that and the significance of going to that school, being given this opportunity, and then kind of leaving it.
Yes. When Dasani left home, the family lost a critical part of their system because Dasani was, as the oldest daughter, a crucial help to her parents.
Right. She was changing diapers and she was feeding the kids and she's taking her brothers and sisters to school. I mean, she was their parent.
By the time most school children in New York City are waking up to go to school, Dasani had been working for probably 2 hours. Her parents were overwhelmed. Dasani saw that and she was trying her best to help them. She carried huge burdens. And when she got to Hershey, those burdens sort of lifted. And she felt this peace, and she was able to focus and concentrate, and she actually took off and started to really thrive. She made huge leaps in math. She had been 2 grade levels behind. She joined the track team and then later the cheerleading team. At home, in her absence, things started to fall apart. Dasani feels that it's because she left. Her parents would tell it differently. They came under the monitoring of the Child Protection Agency. The vast majority of these families are being basically investigated for parental neglect, which is different from abuse. Those are the two forms of child maltreatment. Abuse being when a parent wants to intentionally inflict harm. Neglect is more about the failure to provide. So the failure to provide adequate shelter, the failure to provide adequate clothing.
So Dasani blames herself because the children are placed in foster care.
She blames herself because she feels like she abandoned them. And in her absence, they were placed in foster care. Had she been there, the family operated differently when she was there.
And what happened to Dasani? I mean, this story doesn't have a happy Hollywood ending. Dasani left the Hershey School, and where is she today?
Her life trajectory does not land in the way that popular culture wants it to as someone who has escaped poverty. But she's making it on her own terms. She graduated high school, becoming the first in her family to do so, in her immediate family. She started classes at LaGuardia Community College. So she's making her way on her own terms. And to her, that means doing both things, keeping her family in her life while also taking strides forward.
You know, it's one thing to learn the life story of one child in such often horrifying detail, but then multiply that across so many other homeless children in New York City, in Baltimore, in Chicago, in Detroit. I mean, it becomes this unbearable, real moral failing, right? Are we really a nation that sweeps these people, real people, under the rug, turns a blind eye? Where do we shift this? How do we change this, Andrea?
What I hope is that people will read this book and start seeing beyond labels like homeless and poor, because they are limited and they don't really describe the broader truth, which is that there is this deep historical context and that these are very complicated problems, but that is not a reason to sort of turn away from them. The material reality of Dasani's life, her homelessness, her family's lack of money, is merely the point of departure for understanding her human condition. And the more that readers engage with her, the clearer it becomes that every single one of these stories is worthy of attention.
Andrea, what do you want us to remember about Dasani's story?
I think I want people to never lose sight of the child who went to her window every morning the year I met her as an 11-year-old and looked out at the Empire State Building because it made her feel like something better was out there waiting for her. The hope of this story is that it's her vision for herself and our vision for children like her to not lose sight of that. That is my biggest hope.
That's Andrea Elliott, New York Times reporter and author of Invisible Child. Andrea, thank you so much for your work, and thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Invisible Child is this year's Pulitzer Prize winner for nonfiction. It's out in paperback tomorrow. And we have this update from Andrea. Dasani is living in an apartment with her mother and two siblings in the Bronx. She's in her second semester at LaGuardia Community College, majoring in business administration. Her goal is to become a real estate broker. In her own words, she is strong and surviving.